Welcome to the Talent Development Think Tank Podcast, the number one podcast for learning and talent development professionals. Now here's your host, Andy Storch.
Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat Podcast. I am your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you are joining me today for another great episode and conversation to help you up your game and improve your capabilities in the world of talent development and beyond. Today's conversation is not just about talent development, it's about HR as well. My guest is someone who has worked in both general HR and more extensively in talent development in multiple organizations and has a lot of great wisdom to share, not just from the work he's done, but from the many HR executives that he has also been interviewing over the last couple of years. My guest today is JP Elliott, who is a forward-thinking global human resources executive with extensive experience implementing human capital initiatives that drive business results, improve organizational performance, and elevate company culture. Over his career, JP has been fortunate to work across a broad spectrum of industries and organizations, many undergoing significant business and cultural transformations. These experiences have shaped him into a versatile, pragmatic, and global leader who builds strong teams that deliver results. JP has worked in organizations like Brinks, Dick's Sporting Goods, JCPenney, McAfee, and most recently, Williams Marston. And he also is the founder and host of the Future of HR podcast, which, if you haven't checked out, is a great show just like ours, where he interviews many different HR executives and thought leaders around the HR space, all around not just what's going on in HR, but really where are things going. And I've had JP on the podcast twice in the past. He was on episode 66, which came out in February of 2019, where we talked about the science of selection back when he was at Dick's Sporting Goods. And then again, episode 200, which came out in 2020, we talked about assessing strategy and getting executive support. And that was actually part of the Talent Development Virtual Summit that I ran in the fall of 2020. And I interviewed JP. I really wanted to talk to him at that time about how do you get executive buy-in and really build relationships with people in the C-suite, something I knew he was very good at. And today we talk more about things like executive assessment, developing leaders at scale, as well as the lessons he's learned from running the Future of HR podcast, and some of his advice for HR professionals and how they can grow and scale their careers and really set themselves up or set yourselves up for future success. Quick note on this, JP and I did sort of a double interview on this day where I interviewed him for this podcast, and he also interviewed me for his podcast called The Future of HR. So check that out. You'll hear me on there soon. And I'm also going to take that interview that we did for his podcast and publish it on this podcast as well. So that'll be coming in the near future. For now, I am excited for you to listen to my conversation with JP Elliott about executive assessment and the future of HR. Before we do, I just want to let you know that this podcast, of course, is sponsored by the Talent Development Think Tank Conference and Community, something I've been running since 2020 and is still going strong. We have a membership community with over 100 members who connect and talk on a regular basis with monthly calls. We have a tier for L&D professionals as well as one for entrepreneurs in the L&D space. And we're also hosting a conference again coming up in November of this year, November 6th and 7th in Orlando, Florida. You can find all of the information at our website, tdtt.us. That's tdtt.us. All right, now without further ado, here is my wide-ranging conversation with JP Elliott. All right, I'm joined now by JP Elliott, who is an HR and talent development expert. And JP, I believe this is your third time on our podcast, the Talent Development Hot Seat Turned Talent Development Think Tank. So welcome back.
Well, happy to be back, Andy. Always great to hang out with you and talk shop.
Yeah, we did an interview for your show, which I'm really excited to see and hear out in the world, the Future of HR podcast. And you launched that since the last time we did an episode, an interview. And I'm excited to dig into some of your lessons from that because you've been interviewing a lot of CHROs, heads of HR and talent development. And I know you've learned a lot in addition to your own knowledge and experience and skills. But for those that maybe haven't heard our earlier episodes, maybe we can start with just a little bit of your background and how did you get into this HR space to begin with?
Oh, it's a great question. I have to go back to my mom and dad, actually. So my mom is a marriage and family counselor. My dad had a PhD in economics, but was an entrepreneur. And it was always this mix of business and people. That was sort of the intersection of my family. And my dad had a really big influence on just kind of having a strong business acumen. And my mom was always really about, you know, thinking about people and relationships, and, you know, kind of putting those two together made perfect sense. Got a PhD in organizational psychology. And, you know, once I found that field, I was like, this is where I want to be. And then was really fortunate enough to start my career in Taco Bell and Yum Brands in a really, really great organization, saw what great HR looked like, moved out into consulting, did that for a while, then went back internal into talent development roles at Lenovo. And I've been head of talent at you know, Dick's Sporting Goods, the Brinks Company, McAfee. And I've been also, you know, most recently a chief people officer for Williams Marston, a private equity backed company. And so I think about myself as really just a business focused talent and HR executive with probably a major in talent and a minor in HR in terms of how I thought about my career and where I focus my time. And so I've been really, really fortunate to do that. And I think it's, you know, it aligns with who I am, my purpose, and making that impact, not only for organizations, but for the people who work there.
When we have done interviews in the past, we focused a lot on assessing talent. And if I look back at our episodes, the science of selection and assessing strategy and getting executive support was one we did in the past as well. When you think about assessment and especially executive assessment, what would you say is kind of the state of that, or what are you seeing as the best practices around executive assessment today?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because executive assessment and assessment in general continues to grow as an industry. You know, we're doing more and more assessments, but where I see people sort of falling down or not doing enough is upfront thinking about the assessment strategy. So why are we doing the assessment, right? Asking what is leadership for what? You know, what do we really need? What are the capabilities we're building in this company? What are the types of leaders and skills and capabilities we have in the future? We're a little bit too focused on now, or sometimes even the past when we're thinking about this. So as you think about assessment, you've got to be really thoughtful. It's obviously around development. Is it around assignment management, right? Because we collect a lot of data, and then what are we going to do with it? Now, we always talk about development, but the reality is doing an assessment, whether it's a full day, a simulation assessment, it's a Hogan, any other kind of personality or a 360 feedback, giving some of that data isn't enough. You have the knowing-doing gap. Like, we all know we've got things we've got to work on. The real next step is how do you get people to start to take the change, to make those changes in behaviors? And so I think it's great. You definitely need to understand your talent, but going in really thoughtfully and saying, hey, this is what we expect of our assessment strategy. This is how we're going to use the data. This is how it's going to help inform where we're going as a future is really, really critical. And a lot of organizations just don't do that. They collect the data and then they're like, okay, now what do we do with it? And it can hurt your brand. It can hurt your brand in terms of that assessment because leaders say, well, what are you doing with that data? How is that helping us? Yeah. And it hurts the brand of the leadership team. So I think just being really thoughtful about starting with the end in mind is critical.
How do you know if you need to go with an outside provider and create something really complex? You mentioned simulation assessments, which I've been a little bit involved in the past, which is really cool, versus, you know, doing something a little simpler inside your organization, just like doing interviews and having conversations with executives.
You know, it really depends on the context. So if you are in a smaller organization, you know, and, you know, obviously, if you're in a mid-market company, you may only have a few hundred people in the firm, you know, the company. And at that point, you know who's really doing well and who's not. So we're really talking about kind of that more Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 companies that are probably doing a lot more of this assessment. In those areas, I think you need to, again, thinking about what you're trying to do. One, if it's for early career, what you're trying to do is identify and differentiate the top performers. So who are the ones that have potential to go farther and faster? Who are the ones that maybe have more capabilities that we want to invest in? Mid-career, you're really thinking about how do you align and accelerate people's careers at that point? So how do we get alignment on who are the people we're really investing in? How do we help get them the right roles and leverage that? And when you get to the senior level, you're really talking about how do we shape and refine those leaders? Because at that point, they're kind of baked, right? We already know they're pretty successful. I often even say when you do like a 9-box exercise, people always get really wrapped around the axles when you talk about vice presidents and above, like, well, are they high potentials? Well, and of course, all the VPs think they're high potentials. But the reality is, if you think about potentials moving up, you're probably not. Like, most of those VPs are actually have made their potential. And now it's more about how do we help get the highest performance out of them and help them grow their careers in different ways. So that's why that's shaped and refined. So that assessment strategy overall is really, really critical.
related to that, it seems like every company I talk to is working on some type of succession planning and especially leadership development. You know, how do we develop our leaders, the leaders of the future, the emerging leaders, our executives, the middle leaders? There's a lot of different ways to go with that. But related to this topic of executive assessment and succession planning, you mentioned HIPO. What are you seeing as kind of the best practices right now when companies are looking at creating or modifying leadership development programs so that they can help their managers or future leaders really develop to be more successful in the future?
Yeah, there's a couple different approaches. And I think, again, it comes down to budget, context, and what that business really needs. But one, I would say every organization needs to be really thoughtful about career transitions and having support at career transition. So, you know, kind of that step up from individual contributor to first-time manager. You know, I think the best organizations are now having, hey, this is a prep for aspiring managers or people leaders. Now that you've been promoted, here's a program for people who are people leaders. Here's how it helps you get up to speed and actually be able to execute that. And then thinking about people leaders who are a manager of managers, right? So now you're managing maybe directors. That next step up, that is a different way to think about how you add value. So the best organizations have started to build out this kind of career journey and pipeline with learning development support. That's number one, because every organization has those transitions and they're so critical to being very successful. When you think about, I think I build you a good baseline. Then if you think about how do I build the right succession plans, many organizations, especially if they're larger, succession planning is a really, it's a very, very big process. And, you know, it can be time consuming. And frankly, if we've all are honest with ourselves, we do succession plans and maybe 50% of the time, maybe less, we actually execute the succession plan. We're like, well, hey, gosh, Andy's been on the, been here for, he's ready now for the last 3 years, but we haven't promoted him. Instead, we went outside and hired a new CFO. Well, why is that? Because a lot of times we're not as realistic as we need to be in those processes. So number one, if you are doing succession planning, I'd bring data back. How did we do last year? And take a look and hold the mirror up when we didn't make the decisions and when we did make the decisions we said we're going to make on succession planning. Number two, a lot of organizations are moving to really just critical roles and really being thoughtful about where do we have to have continuity of talent? Where is it really important? What are the pivotal roles for someone's development if we're trying to build general managers or whatever we're trying to really make sure we've got the right leadership internally? And so there, you've got to be thoughtful about assignment management. And you have to sit down with the business unit and say, well, what are the roles and experiences someone has to have to be successful in this job in the future? And so now knowing those roles and backing into it, how do we design a process where we're going to rotate people in and out over a few 2 or 3 year period to get those experiences? And then that's what the best organizations are doing. So it's not a peanut butter spread approach to succession planning. You certainly can do that. It may or may not be useful. I think a little more targeted approach can be more useful. And then really thinking about how you can help design, especially the higher levels, career paths that get us the skill sets we're needed to have.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I think, you know, the key words there is really being thoughtful, taking your time to think about, like you said, those career transitions, leveraging data as much as you can for succession planning, moving to more critical roles and being thoughtful about the continuity of talent and where things are going. Because you really got to think about the whole experience, the whole life cycle of where people are going in their careers. There's so many more options. So many companies are really trying to create more talent mobility now, you know, creating talent marketplaces and thinking more about skills than they are just moving like up the ladder from one role to the next.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so that's a great point you bring up. I mean, there's two things sort of happening at once. And I think two things can be true at one time. If you're an organization, you're a CEO or the C-suite or CHRO, you should be thinking about what are those most pivotal leadership roles that we're building people for that take time to develop. It's not a great strategy to hire externally. You know, really honestly, when you think about probably 25 to 30% of your hires should come external, the rest should be internally promoted. That's kind of a good benchmark. So there are certain roles you have to be thoughtful, and we're going to try to build, you know, a country general manager, an SVP of sales or operations, whatever it matters for your firm. Below that though, I think there's incredible, incredible opportunities with talent marketplaces. And why that matters is because we want people to own their careers. We want people to have that and be empowered to figure out what's going to be best for them, to take the advantage of their career and the opportunities that is there at that company. So I'm a very big fan of those programs and systems and moving laterally and having that happen. And I think talent, learning development, HR's job is to facilitate that, to build the systems and processes where that can happen. Because we're not, none of us have all this crystal ball. You know, we may be able to design something for a country general manager, but we aren't really trying to design, you know, how a director become and product manager becomes a senior director or takes a lateral to move into, you know, finance or whatever they want to do. That is important to have that empowerment and have a system that works for all. So you need both really to happen at the right levels.
I want to talk about the Future of HR podcast that you started a couple of years ago, because I remember when you started this podcast and I was impressed, you know, right off the bat, but I've listened to some episodes and you really have done a great job. You've had some amazing guests, some really senior HR and L&D professionals on there, really sharing a lot of great insights, not only about where HR might be going, but especially about how they've developed their careers and advice for others. And I know that it's brought you a lot of insights as well. Why did you start the podcast, and what insights have you gained? What have you learned from this process?
Well, first, Andy, I have to kind of say you're part of the inspiration. I saw you doing the podcast and was really impressed and gave me the nudge a little bit of like, hey, if Andy can do this, I could try this.
Come on.
Right. If Andy can make it happen. You know, and I saw the power of what you were doing. But really, truthfully, it just came back to a couple things. In 2022, when I started thinking about podcasts, I really wasn't into podcasts before that. My wife and I started to listen to them and I was like, huh, okay, this is interesting. So I started to listen to different HR podcasts. And it felt like a little bit of a gap. There wasn't really someone talking to what I would call next generation HR leaders. And I've had an incredible career with incredible mentors and relationships that I've built, and thought, gosh, how incredible it would be if I could have heard some of these and gotten to know some of these leaders when I was in my early 20s, early career. And then, you know, we've talked a little about this in our conversation. You know, I just said, I'm going to do it. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? And right. So I bought a microphone. And the microphone I'm talking on now. And I bought it on Amazon and I researched it and it arrived. And my wife's like, what is this microphone? And I said, I'm starting a podcast. She's like, what? And I said, yeah, I bought the microphone. So I've invested money in it. I'm now going to figure out how to start a podcast. And that rest is sort of history, you know, and I think it's taken off and it's gotten a lot more popular than I expected. And I think it's a testament to the great guests that are willing to come on the show and share their story. And frankly, just the mission of giving back to the next gen. So it's been incredible to see it. And, you know, I'm blessed to be able to help facilitate this and give back to our community. In terms of
Thanks. Okay. Well, I'll just say you've done a great job and you have had some great guests. You also have a very thoughtful process. I know, having been a guest, but also having been a listener, to how you approach it and keep things moving along and have good conversations. But yeah, I'm curious what you've interviewed several great guests now. What have you learned from this experience?
Yeah, I think we're probably 80 episodes are published or so right around now. We're having our conversation. God, you know, let me back up a couple of things. So what I would say I've learned, number one, is great HR leaders, you know, really understand a few things. One, they are what I call execution plus. So they understand how to execute. They understand the basics is how we get our credibility. And they're going to drive things around that. So the best HR leaders not only know how to make sure that we're doing the blocking and tackling, but they're leveraging that then to say, look, if I can execute this, I can do more. That is really, really important. Number two, you know, they are pushing the organization forwards in different ways. So they're very thoughtful, but they're courageous. They are challenging their business leaders. They're challenging people to make better decisions. You know, they really are looking to progress not only the organization, but what they're doing for that employee experience. That's really critical. And the other thing has really been interesting, even though we're in the age of AI and that's all the hype and the talk, and it will, of course, dramatically impact, you know, all of our lives, and it's starting to do that. The best HR leaders aren't talking about technology. They're talking about what technology can do to help the business, what can do to help people's careers, where it can move organizations forward and as a tool and an enabler, not as the end all be all. And so that has, I think, been really, really impressive.
As you have had these conversations, I know that you have developed a bit of a passion around developing the HR leaders of the future, especially early career HR professionals, because there's not a lot of great tools out there. Certainly, there's lots of disparate resources. But when you think about, you know, your own career and what you've learned from so many of these great HR leaders, when you're speaking to, say, earlier career HR professionals or mid-career thinking about how can they develop their career to be more successful in the future, you know, what are some of the things that you talk about how people can really set themselves up for more success?
Yeah, there's really four things that I think are critical to having a successful career in HR and really accelerating your career in HR, especially for a next gen HR leader. Number one, it's be a business person, not a business partner. And this, in my mind, is not just around understanding and speaking the language of business, understanding, you know, the metrics that matter for your organization, being able to break down a P&L or a business model, but it's also about having a personal leadership philosophy in a brand, being really clear of who you are. But identifying as a business person is the first step. Second, you know, you have to influence and communicate with impact. So you've got to be able to be a courageous communicator, challenge ideas to get better decision making, leverage storytelling to influence, engage others, you know, build trust and credibility with people you work with and key stakeholders, and adapt your communication style. You also have to be a sharp, critical, and strategic thinker. You know, this is where I'd say you got to really rely heavily on thinking frameworks and asking the right questions. So it's not that I'm going to say, hey, I need you to go be a lot smarter, but you have to be more intentional about frameworks that you use. And there are lots of frameworks out there, lots of good books on how to think, ask great questions. That's really important. And making data-driven decisions and understanding and comfortable with data is also really important in this area, right? So the business lives on data. HR has more data than we've ever had at our fingertips. We've got to, you know, really embrace that and grab that. And last, this is probably one of the most important, is that you've got to be able to drive value and impact through people initiatives. You've got to be able to actually take HR, the business objectives, and translate that to an HR or people strategy that drives value and impact. You've got to be able to measure your ROI. You've got to think about how can we help or solve this problem with an HR people solution. If you do all four of those things, I think you will have a terrific career in HR.
Ooh, I really like those. So I heard be a business person, not a business partner, influence and communicate with impact and courageously, leveraging storytelling, building trust, etc. Be a sharp, critical, strategic thinker and making data-driven decisions. And then finally, drive value and impact through people initiatives. So this is connecting back to the strategy, communicating that to our people initiatives, be able to translate that into something that's going to make an impact for the business.
Absolutely. You have to be able to draw that bottom line. I mean, I've said this many times, but if you're doing a learning development program, a talent initiative, whatever it is, you need to be able to say that that's either driving revenue, increasing productivity, moving the culture forward in some way that aligns with the business objectives, you know, or frankly, you know, reducing costs. You know, if you can't align to one of those four things, then you're missing the boat. And you've got to be really clear about that with your leaders up front, because there might be expectations that you are going to be able to do that. So those are the four that I always kind of look through and say, hey, am I hitting one of these or more than one?
Yeah. What would you say someone who's listening who is maybe earlier career in HR, or they're working in a smaller organization and they're like, I'm just not in those business conversations. You know, the business comes to me when they have a training need and a request, but I'm not really as involved. I don't get involved in the impact and I don't get to play around as much with the data. You know, how do you get more involved with that to kind of move yourself up the chain?
It's a great question. And I've gotten this question before. And there's a few things that I would say. It's very common, honestly, depending on where you're at in your career and what the organization's like. But the number one way to get invited to these conversations much more proactively is to invite yourself. And what I mean by that is you've got to start to do the lay the groundwork with these leaders to say, tell me about how the business works. Help me understand how we make money. What are the big challenges we're facing? So sit down with, you know, your CFO, your VP of finance, your head of operations, your sales leaders, and become really much closer to them to understand their challenges. Because once they start to do that and you're asking good questions and you're able to start to get some credibility because you understand what they're going through, more likely they start to bring you in. Secondarily, you know, say, hey, look, you didn't get invited to a meeting, but you should have been there. Be courageous and say, come back and say, hey, next time I would like to be there. And here's why. Mm. If I'm there, I've got more context. If I'm there, I can help think about how we might be able to tailor this. You know, when you kind of come to me and you've already made the decision and now I'm the order taker, right? And you've made your order, I'm the waiter or waitress, and you didn't even order off my menu. I can't really help you and guide you to the right meal, you know, for that analogy. So you've got to kind of be courageous enough to do that and just see what happens and say, look, no, this time's fine, but in the future, please do this. Let me help you do that. The other last suggestion is if you hear about some of these needs, take initiative and say, I'll facilitate a conversation, bring everyone together and say, hey, I've been hearing that these three different functions are talking about this issue, but we haven't come together as a team. I like to facilitate it so you guys can come to a consensus and I can then help build your talent solution or L&D solution together. So again, there's got to be a way for you to get yourself in there, but don't accept that answer. Keep pushing, because unless you are early in the conversation, you will not have the impact you want to have.
Yeah. Here's a bonus question on that. And I don't know if you'll have an answer for it. But I know you talk with a lot of CHROs. So someone's on an HR team and they're looking to provide more value to their boss, to their CHRO or head of the people team. What are they, those heads of people, heads of HR, challenged with most often? What are some ways where you could really provide some great value to your HR team?
Yeah, I think it really does vary, of course, by the organization, by the CHRO or whoever leader you're working with. But there is definitely something that they want to get to that they haven't had time to do, right? Mm. And there's something that they think is important. And I think it's really saying, and this is hard for people to do, but if you want to be a high performer and get ahead, you're going to have to work probably more hours than 40 hours a week. You have to take on extra projects. And I think if you're really that ambitious, you sat down and said, hey, you don't get a full plate. I'd love to be able to pick up another project, or I've got a little more time. I'd love to be able to help you out. What is something that we haven't had time to get to that you feel is critical, that's important, that I'll move the business forward? I'd love to take ownership of it or work directly with you. You know, people, a lot of times we kind of have self-limiting beliefs around what our jobs are, but the reality is we can redesign our jobs every day. And the best leaders, and I've had them a lot on the podcast, have redesigned or even designed their jobs with companies. And so just going and having that conversation, you know, will really be a game changer. And I know that if someone came to me and said, hey, I've got extra time and want to help you on something, I'm going to find a great project for them. I'm going to want to take that initiative and say, let's run with it. And it's going to impress the heck out of me as well. So that's my advice on that piece.
I love that. I wish somebody would say that to me right now. Hey, I have some extra time. Can I take on some of your work? Even though I do have a team, it's like, it's kind of nice to hear that sometimes and to see that someone's eager to take something on. So I really like that advice. I want to ask you about AI. Obviously, this is a really popular topic around the world in every industry, but HR talent development, I think, has a major opportunity to take advantage of AI. It is the future of where things are going. Lots of people are looking at it. It might also be one of those things in many HR departments where the CHRO just hasn't gotten to it, right? Though we haven't really started playing with AI. We don't know what we're going to do with it. I know you've been studying a little bit, Gen AI and HR. You know, what have you kind of learned so far? What are some ways that HR is leveraging AI, some best practices, or just some ideas for people, especially in talent development?
Yeah, I've really taken it myself to try to use AI every day. And actually, if I don't use AI on a day, I feel like I'm failing. And I've been much more creative. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was on I saw a post on LinkedIn. It was around AI tools in HR. It probably had like 300 likes and maybe 150 comments. Like, it was really a very robust conversation. It wasn't my post. Someone else had a great comment that they got started this great thread. And there was probably, I don't know, maybe 20 or so different vendors that are mentioned that had AI for HR that had some kind of applicability. And I've been starting using more Claude, which is kind of like ChatGPT, just different versions by Anthropic. And so I just said, hey, wait a minute, what if I just copied and pasted all the comments and asked Claude to summarize it into a post? Worked brilliantly. Then reposted that back out for him and said, hey, by the way, here you go. You don't have to go through 100 comments. Here's all 25 companies that were mentioned there. And so I think you've got to really, number one, just start experimenting. You've got to start to figure out and use it. But if you're as a company, an HR team, you haven't gotten aligned on this, you need to get alignment on, like, what is generative AI? What is it really? What are the limitations? What are the use cases? You know, what are the possibilities? Most HR teams have not done this. Also, the executive teams need to get aligned. So for CHROs, your job is to really make sure your executive teams are understanding what this is going to mean for the industry, for that business, and for all of your employees. Just recently at the I4CP conference, and we did a show of hands of how many people have actually implemented an AI policy, and it wasn't even 25% of the room. Yet everyone said their team members are using it. So it's less about policy, but we need to be thoughtful about having a strategy, how we are going to use it, and then helping guide our team members to get there. So that's really, really critical. For use cases, there are lots of use cases. I think it's going to vary by organization, by creativity. I think L&D is really ripe. You know, people talk a lot about TA. I think it's already built into a lot of TA systems, and there's more we can do. But from learning development, you know, curriculum design, you know, coaching, et cetera. I mean, honestly, the possibilities are sort of endless. It's endless. It's really about your creativity of using AI as a, I think, kind of a supercharged assistant to help you really think. In fact, one of my friends who's a Gen AI developer who I've kind of recently gotten to know, that's why he recommended Claude. He said, Claude's like, I hate to say it, it's kind of like my best friend. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that's great. My wife thinks I need more friends, so maybe I'll use Claude and check it out and see how it works. But you can definitely go in there and just and bounce ideas off of it and see what comes mm-hmm. back. And I think it's a really incredible way to augment who you are and the work you do.
I like it. So to summarize, like, just start playing around and then start to think about what is your policy around it. How do you want the organization to be using it? Start experimenting. There's so much opportunity, so much possibility. I like that challenge to try to use AI at least once a day. I like to play with it a lot, but I don't think I use it once a day. So I'm going to have to dig back in. I love the summary idea. Okay, last thing I want to ask you about, JP, is you and I have known each other for several years now. You've been in a few roles since during that time. And one of the things I've really noticed and admired about you is that you have been really great and thoughtful about building a network, building relationships with lots of people in different places, especially throughout HR and talent development, really building a personal brand as an expert in this space that's led to, I think, multiple opportunities for you. And, you know, this is something that I've been thoughtful about doing as well, but like, I don't see as many people who are in the corporate space really doing it like you have. So I'm just wondering if you could share some thoughts on your approach to networking, to building relationships, building personal brands, how that's helped you in your career.
I appreciate that, Andy. You know, it kind of comes naturally. You know, I think it's funny because you think about, I think you're kind of like this as well. You're somebody who likes to connect ideas, connect people, and really kind of give back. And I guess my strategy on this, and it's, you have to be genuine. I mean, you have to like people and you have to give before you take. You have to try to give back. And, you know, the podcast has definitely helped build my network because I get to meet a lot of great people. But my strategy has always been, well, how can I help you? What can I do? Can I make an introduction to somebody else? Can I help, you know, present an idea for you? Can I share something that I have seen that maybe you would be thought you think could be helpful? And that's what my friend Angela Lane and Sergey Gorbatov call a proactive networker. You know, and mm-hmm. I think too many of us, number one, we say, well, gosh, I'm really busy. I don't have time for 30 minutes. I don't have time to meet this new person. That is a bad idea. And there's lots of people who are, you know, LinkedIn or Twitter, whoever, gurus, that'll say, you know, say no, don't say yes. Mm. I would say yes to networking more. Number one, you meet somebody, you've got new ideas. They have new perspectives. That's going to help you in your career. And too many people in HR are too inwardly focused. We don't do enough to kind of hear what's going on. Just like when people join your, you know, talent development kind of network and community, they want to hear what other people are doing. So that's mm-hmm. really important. And so I would suggest this. If your network's not great, you want to build it, and you see someone post something on LinkedIn, or you like what they're doing, or they're in a role that you think could be helpful, send them a note on LinkedIn and say, hey, we're in similar roles. I'd love to connect and, you know, pick your brain. You're going to be surprised. More often than not, people are going to say yes. And those things are going to lead to a better network, better ideas for your company, and hopefully a better and brighter career.
Yeah, maybe opportunities, jobs, projects, or even just friendships later on. You know, like we've developed, I think we met through LinkedIn, you know, something like 6 years ago or whatever, and have developed a friendship, multiple podcast interviews, we've hung out at the conference, and, you know, always looking for ways to support each other.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, last question for you, JP. I know you like to end your podcast by asking your guests what is one word that they would give to define the future of HR. So I'm sure you've thought about this. What is your word right now to define the future of HR?
Well, I did an episode where I actually had to answer this question. So I feel it'd be bad to use that same one again, but I said AI. Hmm. But yeah, I got the question and I said AI, but what I really meant was authentic influence. And, you know, what that means for me is I think, you know, as HR, as we be our authentic selves, focus on the way that we can transform an organization, right? thinking about people, processes, systems, and culture, how that comes together, the more that we can be authentic and step into who we are, the more influence we're going to have. And I think the best HR leaders are authentically who they are. They're courageous communicators, and that leads to greater influence with business leaders and, frankly, in the organizations we work in. So that's why I'd say AI. I'll stick with that one for now, besides artificial intelligence, which is just me having saying like that word it. Way too much.
Like,
so,
have you heard of AI? Oh, I like it. That's really good. This JP, this has been fantastic. I always love talking with you in general. Love our interviews. You always bring so many great insights. Even more now that you've been running this podcast. So if you're listening to this and you work in HR, you need to go subscribe to the Future of HR podcast with JP Elliott. Make sure you go check that out. I know you can connect with JP on LinkedIn. He's active on there, the consummate networker. So go connect with JP, let him know you heard him on our podcast, and make sure you connect and follow me as well. JP, thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Andy. Always a pleasure to hang out and talk with you.
All right, that will do it for my conversation with JP Elliott. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you got a lot of value from it. I really enjoyed it, as I always do, talking with JP, and I wrote down some really key takeaways there about being thoughtful about assignment, assessment, and management. We talked about talent mobility and marketplaces. We talked about the Future of HR podcast and what JP has learned. Some of the lessons from his podcast I thought were really interesting about where HR is going, what the best HR professionals are doing. We talked about critical elements for HR pro success. And he mentioned there being a business person, not a business partner, influencing and communicating with impact courageously, being a sharp and critical strategic thinker, making data-driven decisions, and driving value and impact through people initiatives, and really looking to measure ROI with everything that you do. We also talked about the best way to get into conversations is to invite yourself, adding value to the HR team, right? How you can think about adding value if you're trying to grow in your career. And JP talked about leveraging Gen AI in HR. And I really like that he said he's trying to use AI every single day, which is a really cool challenge. You know, I'm really feel like I've embraced AI. I'm trying to use it, you know, remember to use it regularly, and I'm not using it every day. So that was a good reminder for me to, you know, try to challenge myself to pull it out and use it almost every single day. I've got a webinar coming up with my friend Josh Ermler all about AI and talent development. And it's too late for you to register by the time you listen to this, but if it goes well, I am going to publish that on this podcast as well. So look out for that coming out. Actually, it may be out before this episode. I'm not as organized as some people, but I think we are publishing this in July. That webinar, audio from that webinar with Josh should be out sooner, and we may do another one soon. We always give notice first to people in the Talent Development Think Tank community, but the webinars we do publish more widely on LinkedIn and to our email list as well. You can go find out information about the podcast, about the community, and about the conference that I run by going to our website, tdtt.us. Click on community to learn about our membership community, which is virtual, and click on conference to find all the information about our Talent Development Think Tank conference, which I'm hosting November 6th and 7th in sunny Orlando, Florida. All right. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate you. I hope that you'll share this with your colleagues and friends. I appreciate all of the support on LinkedIn and everywhere else. And I just hope that you will take the lessons, you'll put some things into action, and that you will find a little bit of gratitude for the work and life that you get to live. Cheers.